Nice. Are you okay? I
How
mean,
about
I
you?
saw all the stuff about the fire. Are you okay?
I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
So
That's right.
yeah, 500 miles away, so all is good.
Very cool. David, how are you?
Good morning, everybody.
How are we doing today?
Okay, doing
Yeah.
all right.
Good.
Very
I had
psychedelic
surgery last
background there,
week.
David.
Actually, that's an invitation I produced this past year.
No
So
kidding.
I thought it looked pretty cool.
Wow. Was
That's a new form of
that
self-promotion.
done digitally or?
Yeah, I gotta say that most of what I have in house is digital, unless it's got embossing or some sort of unique finishing to it. So
That looks like you use some of that, like the vivid colors from like Xerox or Fuji or Ricoh, the specialty fifth and sixth colors.
No, because when I saw this, I just had them reduce a little bit of black out
Yeah.
of the colors, and they began to pop. You go up 2% in your other colors, and it comes right out. So if I can establish it that way, then that's what I would prefer.
No, that's an
And
interesting
that was
idea
done
too.
on an indigo. That's done on an indigo.
That's fascinating because a lot of artists don't understand the function of selective color and being able to remove black from your other colors cleans them up. And it's the same thing with removing colors from your white for brighter whites. I use selective color a lot and go in and adjust those palettes very manually.
Wait, explain to me the white again. You could take color out of the white.
Yeah, when you have like dirty pictures off of the internet or someone sends you a muddy
Wait,
looking
wait,
J.
wait. Kevin, I know where you're
Oh,
going
no,
with this, but I saw this coming 10 miles
I mean,
away. Matt stepped
no.
right in there.
You're the one with the dirty mind because I'm talking about dirty color. It's like it's been adulterated, or it just wasn't very clean to start with. So a lot of times, if you want a pure white, you have to go in and remove all the other colors from the white. And you'll be surprised how much color is in the white. It's not actually white, but your screen is not as discerning, and neither is your eye. So you can do an AB and you just take select color in Photoshop. Go to just select whites. You're just only going to adjust the whites, and you move all those sliders to the left and take all the color out of the whites. You're like, wow, what
Really?
a difference. Yeah. And the same thing with blacks. If everything's looking a little muddy, just as David has indicated, you go into the blacks and remove some of the black from the other colors, and then they do brighten up.
Yeah, I mean, if you're helping your client design for press and you're beginning to see what that imagery looks like, kind of know what the press is capable of doing, kind of know what the outcome is going to be, then that upfront direction is really really helpful and actually becomes somewhat standard. But it, Matt, in what you just said, that comes through experience as well, of being able to make those moves.
Yeah, and it's also an old trick that when you have a rich black and you have to, oh, I used to do telephone directories, and the one it was all web press. But one thing that a web press typically cannot handle, because you're printing on toilet paper, okay, you have a certain ink saturation, so you cannot print a rich black. You cannot send an RGB file to these presses. It's forbidden. So everything has to be in CMYK, and all of your blacks have to be 100% black. So that's where that selective color comes in, where you can take your black and remove all the other colors from the black so that you're just left with black.
Very cool. Well, thank you for that lesson and design, Matt. That was, I had no idea.
Kevin, I think we can go home now. We already learned something for
We're done.
Well, that's an issue that we have all the time in prepress, is that certain machines can only produce certain, you know, blacks faithfully.
Right.
And you have a maximum, usually your maximum, if you combine C, M, Y, and K, yeah, and you have 15% yellow and 85% cyan, you got all these different values and you add them all up, they cannot go beyond 220 or 240%.
Right.
Because then the machine is like, hey, I can't reproduce that saturation of color on this stock with this medium. And that's where EFI and Fiery all come into play. Because what they'll do is they'll compress that down into a space that will fit on that paper with that toner or that indigo ink. And that's why everybody is like, that's not what it was supposed to look like. Well, that's how you built your file, and that's what the how it all got compressed, and then that's what you ended up with.
Mm-hmm. So, guys, listen, I thought we would first of all thank you all for being here. We still have a couple people that we have a lot of people that you normally should be popping on here in a couple of minutes, but I thought I'd kick off the conversation based on the theme that we had, and I've actually seen Sabine. You've been doing some good work around like the big trends that you're seeing in embellishments for 2025, and maybe we can kind of kick that off on like what your gut feeling is, and maybe we can have everybody kind of join and talk about what you guys are seeing out there. So, Sabine, what are you kind of seeing out there?
I see a lot of confusion. I see a lot of designers not knowing what's possible. But back to that, it hasn't changed, unfortunately, in the last five whatever years.
Yeah.
So can I interject here? 2024 was a train wreck. It was the same.
Yeah, I'm trying to be nice about this. But
it was more of the same, where designers were like, well, let's try this and let's try that. And there wasn't really any forward motion with, right. I mean, there are trends and there are little sub pockets here and there. But by the time the year was over, it was like, I was more confused than anything. So this year seems to be moving into more of a melting pot, but I'm hoping that what we can do as a group is trying to congeal it a little bit better.
Explain and melting pot, please.
Melting pot is
melting pot.
You've got minimalist and maximalist.
Yes.
Sitting right next to each other.
Yeah.
On the same scale of, hey, this is what we're going to do this year. And you're like, wait a minute, those are like complete opposite ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But then again, you look, one thing that I noticed, it was an interesting observation that someone brought up on one of their little podcasts, and it might have been author Pargin or something, I don't know who did it, but the premise was like, have you noticed that lately everybody looks like they did in the 90s? And nothing has really changed in the way people look since the 90s. In other words, you look in the photos from the 60s, everybody had a certain look, a certain style, the clothes were all a certain way. You look at the 50s, it was extremely distinctively different. You look at the 40s, you look at the 30s, you look at the 20s. But since 1990 and moving forward, it's just become this melting pot of all those styles. And so you see a guy with a top knot, and then you see a guy with a mullet, and then you see a guy with a shaved head. And so, and then you see a guy with long flowing hair. So it's just all over the place and everything works.
I think you just described everybody here.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at us.
David has the long flowing hair. That's for sure.
Yeah,
Matt can't compete with that one. I think that that's a problem, but it's also an opportunity because, how do I say this? And one of my future blog posts is going to be, what does Pantone's color of the year actually mean to you? Do you care? You know, because it's like, why would you care? But never mind, don't tell anybody yet. But I think it's really, the good thing, the pro is that everybody can utilize it to do what they want to do with it. The bad thing or the bad news is they don't know what to do with it to begin with.
Well, the one thing that I'm confused about with that specific example with the Pantone colors, like, okay, you're telling me this is the color of the year and it's supposed to be like, oh, woohoo, let's throw confetti. And it's like, it's
oh,
like,
that's on fire, is it?
It's like yeah. Poop brown. It's like,
it's ooh. Not just that. What are you going to do with it next year? You spoil all your branding out?
When it's like, purple? Well, yeah, it's just marketing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Publicity, that's all it is. Yeah.
All it is. They're just trying to draw attention to themselves. And guess what? They have.
Well, they have. The question is, I'm wondering, does anybody know how the whole, which is taking the conversation sideways, Pantone splitting up from Adobe has worked for them?
No. How's that going?
No, I'm asking.
Oh, I don't know.
The designers are trying to find ways around it. 10 ways to Friday. I don't know. Yeah. What have you hearing?
That was the discussion I had with you, Kevin. It's close to a year ago when all this kind of went down. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm sitting in there building swatches all day because my promotional department, they put your logo on pens, they embroider hats and jackets and shirts, and all of those vendors almost ultimately require Pantone colors, especially when it comes to screen printing, and you have select colors to choose from. You're doing like a four color screen print, not like full color, but you have brown and blue and this color of green and that shade of yellow, and those are the only four colors that go on that shirt. So they have to be represented as a spot color, and the standard over the years has always been the Pantone spot. So if I can't give them PMS colors, then they're like, well, then you're just going to get whatever you're going to get, and there's no refunds or exchanges because they can't guarantee the color. So I have to build the swatch. I have to go online, look up the color values, the LAB values, go into my swatches, build the swatch, name it exactly how Pantone would have named it. All caps, Pantone 360 space, Pantone space, 360 space C. Wow. And name the color swatch that, and that way when it goes to them, they don't know any different.
So how long does it take you to do that?
Yeah, my question too.
About a minute.
All right.
Per yeah, color? Down pat. But here's the question, with you using so many Pantone colors, for you, more than like, let's say you're freelance or a small design studio, it might make sense to buy into the monthly
if you were a large design studio with a bunch of sub junior designers, okay, not very experienced designers,
sub, then, I'm sorry, there's a new term, people, sub junior. Mm-hmm. That's on fire today.
Well, yeah. there's senior and junior designers, yeah, and then there's junior. Like apprentices, yeah, they're mm-hmm. like just on a beginning level. So you need to give them those tools to start with so that they understand how to progress forward from there without them.
Right. Interesting.
So, but you're not buying into it. Does anybody know anybody who pays for the monthly fee?
I don't know a single person that does.
David, do you know anybody?
I do not know. And I don't know only because I've never asked the question.
I'm
Marco. Marco, you're on. Can you hear us? Do you know anybody that's paying for that Pantone or no?
Marco's incognito today.
I'm just because I'm at the customer side.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah.
It's good to see you or hear you.
But what you ask, I didn't give you quite what you asked me.
No, the question is, in Europe, are you seeing a lot of designers that are paying for the Pantone plugin to Adobe CS Suite, or is it since they split with Adobe? Are you hearing any issues, or are they buying into it?
I don't know about it, but I have the issues. Yeah, I have the issues if I need to create something now when they split it because of the new Photoshop and Illustrator don't have the Pantone swatch inside, yeah. So I can do it the similar way, like Matt said, create a swatch with that colors and that it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in our front end with the Fiery that, say, drives the Iridesse or whatever machine it's going to drive, that Pantone library is built in. So Fiery and Pantone are still in cahoots with each other. Yeah. I guess because Fiery buys the license to acquire or use the Pantone library. So that's built into the Fiery. And the reason for that is because the machine has somewhat of an extended gamut because the toner, the dry toner, is so bright. It's on the border of fluorescent, just on the border. But it's definitely brighter than CMY and K that you would put on, you know, a typical lithographic offset press. So it's able to have its own algorithms and formulations for developing colors. So it can get a little closer rather than using the standard formulas. So it has its own, rather than using the Adobe method of creating that palette, for whatever results you're going to output, it uses its own internal Xerox Iridesse version. And so if you feed it those Pantone colors, it determines how it lays down that CMYK differently because of what that machine is capable of doing. So I have to be able to maintain. I don't send anything CMYK to that machine. If there's spot colors, I make sure the spot colors go to that machine. So if I were to convert it all to CMYK first, then that machine would have a reduced output.
So can you, for the lower level sub-designer in me, what you're basically saying is that every machine, I'm sorry,
that wasn't for you, Sabine.
No, I know, but I like to ask questions. So basically what we're saying, every machine, every print, whatever, every digital press lays down, that's the word I'm looking for. It's still early here, people. Lays down CMYK in a different fashion. Right. They're not all in the same sequence.
Well, no, it's not necessarily. It's what I'm trying to say is that it's the toners for this machine are different than the toners for that machine. Or right. The inks for this machine are different than the ink. Some use a gel ink, some use a liquid ink, some use the Xerox toners are different from the Ricoh toners.
Right.
So someone like Xerox is going to partner with Fiery to create a better formula for how to lay that down in order to get a little bit brighter blue.
Got it.
Or that type of thing.
Interesting.
Basically, I go inside. In the talk, what Matt said, not every cyan is the same values on the toners on the different machines. You know, it's not the same cyan optical values, so you need to lay down differently. Also, on the Konica Minolta machines, we have also in the Fiery and Konica Minolta RIP, you have the possibility to alter the spot. Pantone colors, you know, I did it at one customer for the roll machine. Basically, they got a lot of labels in the spot colors. And we try to emulate as good as we can the Pantone colors with the CMYK machine. So basically, you print it out through the controller. Then you take it with a spectrophotometer, read the values, readjust it to get it as much as you can get it close to the standard Pantone colors. And also, as you know, the Pantone also issues the swatch book Pantone to CMYK or CMYK to Pantone, something like this. So Pantone gives the visual look of their Pantone colors printed in the CMYK, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get all the Pantone colors, especially not the main one, orange, purple, that purple green. You cannot get it
as sky blue
from the standard stones. Standard stones.
Right. Yeah. So we have those swatch books, and down one side of the strip, there's the well, when's the, I think it's on the left side, there's the spot color, and on the right side is if you were to print that spot color as CMYK. And to build that book, it's quite a masterpiece. The trial and error and technology, you know, hey, kudos to them. And they've been doing it for years, but it actually shows you, if you send this spot color to a CMYK machine, this is what you're going to end up with. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you're like, you've got to be kidding me. Wow, what a difference.
So do you feel overall that with CMYK, as Marco also said, you know, he prints it out, then he finesses it, that you can get closer with CMYK than the actual book suggests?
Possibly.
With your Pantone color?
Possibly, but I don't know of anybody in their right mind who would go to that trouble of doing it. In our shop, the thing...
David knows someone.
Me.
You do. You.
So what I'll do...
David. Look at him. He changes background.
So you are wacko.
Yeah. So if a client is looking for something specific and it's critical, you know, sometimes you can say, you know, we're printing this digitally. You got to give a little leeway and that's okay. But what I'll do is I'll take an 8.5 by 11 sheet. I'll take the CMYK breakdown and I'll move 2% in different directions and then send that to them because, and they'll pick, I want this one. And for me, it just resolves a lot of issues. It takes a little bit of time for me to see it and then to send it to them and then get feedback on it. But it's part of the internal of achieving what they need. So.
Oh, it saves a lot of hassle and just frustration in the background, on the back end.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a repeat customer, you know, and you know they're coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what I find. I find that most repeat customers are not that concerned with it. When you have somebody new, like for instance, producing, you know, some sort of collateral, an invitation, the last vendor didn't get their color correct. And then they'll come to me and they'll say, we didn't like this because. Well, once I do go through that motion, they usually never ask a second time. And once it's dialed in, like I do these corporate cards digitally, once I dial it in, it's there. The formula is there. And I just apply it. It's really simple. It really saves a tremendous amount of time in the future. But what it also does is whenever they have something else that needs to be produced, they say, send it to him. He's got our color down.
That's right. See, he's not just a pretty face, Matt. No, because they want somebody to, that's the number one question we get. And we get constant questions from our member, from our members community. And David knows that he's part of this. I need a printer who can, and they're looking for somebody trustworthy because they've been taken to the cleaners one too many times, and they're looking for somebody they can trust. And if they find somebody they can trust, like David, they will stick with them.
Well, all of us, I think that you know, we are tuned into what that outcome is. Hmm. We're not order takers. You want to be saturated and full of color, and you just don't want to put it through production, and what happens is what happens in the end. It's important to me that I can deliver to them a better product than they're expecting. So you go through your standards, which might not be other people's standards. So that's...
If I can add on to this one, a question. Do you purely print CMYK or do you use extended gamma to get to the color?
I'm truthfully never used extended color.
Okay.
Never used it.
Interesting.
You know, I've been able to fine tune and to nail. That comes out of experience too. Right, Matt? I mean, you begin to look at something and you begin to understand what you need to do to dial it in.
Yeah, and after 10 years in pre-press, you get a pretty good idea. It's right. A lot. It's all experience. You just look at it and say, yeah, that can be done, or it can't be done that way. If you want to have it done, it has to be done this way, you know, that type of thing. But that's where we have these new technologies that do use the extended gamut, so that you can say, well, you know, if we add neon pink or neon yellow or violet and green, then we can achieve those colors. And a lot of large brands do that. They still run essentially their own version of a hexachrome in order. And you look at their packaging, you look, you know, where they run the color dots down the side, there's like 8 or 9 of them. So it's like CMYK +1, +1, +1, +1, +1, +1, +1. You know, it's like our newest printer at Blue Ocean, it's CMYK +7.
And I'm +7?
Plus what is that?
What kind of press is
that? How many colors do you have to that?
Is that an offset?
Yeah, I mean, you don't load them all at the same time, but it is plus, it's essentially +7. And so it could be white, it could be clear, it could be neon pink, neon yellow, orange.
Is it digital or offset, Kevin already asked?
It's inkjet.
Is it white format?
Wide format, yeah, very wide
format. Oh, wide format, all right.
Very wide, but it'll print on it just about anything.
Yeah.
You take the door off your front door and lay it on that machine and print it.
Hmm.
Sounds like a good application. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, hey. Really.
You never know.
Yeah, it also does varnish, and it also does texture. So, you know, that video I just did last week, that painting with the roses and all that. And so it can reproduce the canvas, the palette knife strokes, the brush strokes.
What press is this?
Is this a Swift Q one?
That's what I was saying, Kevin. We are just on the roll today.
It's the Swiss Q Nyala.
Yeah. They just came out with their new generation.
Yeah.
They announced it this week, so it's a big deal. Yeah.
So one quick note on that. I don't know if anybody wants to take up the torch on this, because when this technology that we're supposed to be discussing in this forum, being, you know, digital varnish and digital foil, when I came out on the scene almost 5 years ago now, nobody knew anything about how to do it, and nobody could tell you how to do it. And so you were just kind of, like Kevin says, the Wild West. You know, it's like, we don't really know what we're doing. We're all just trying to figure it out. There's really no standards. So do whatever works for you, blah, blah, blah. And so with this technology, with the Swiss Q, it's the very same thing. The one thing that it can do are these lenticular prints, where it's one thing one way and another thing another way, or you shift it and tilt it. And that's the next video I'm going to put up, actually.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I've seen the samples.
It's my, I can hardly, my brain is like, what? It's like beyond intense. And you can print that on just about anything, but the thicker the acrylic you print it on, the more intense it can become. But they can't tell you how to do it. They've got all these great samples, but I'm like, isn't there a toolkit? Is there anyone to teach me how? Where's the resources?
Matt, go online. Matt, come to call us. We'll figure that out for them.
Yeah, I know, right? So we need to, you know, go. I went online trying to look up tutorials. None. Nothing.
Wait a second. Did you talk to Jason, I assume? It's Swiss Q Print.
I don't personally know anybody at Swiss Q Print.
Well, you know somebody who knows somebody now, and I will make introductions if you'd like.
Please do.
Because Jason is the one that usually, the few times I've made that track out to Elgin, whatever, which I didn't think was that far outside of Chicago, now I know. I make introductions because he's usually the one who figures things out. That's what
I think every good OEM needs what we call application specialists, right? People who understand.
That's him.
Those are like the best profiles, because they have like a profile of a designer, and they understand the equipment really well, and they're able to really make those applications safe.
Yeah. As a side note, I just would like to say that every time I log in to LinkedIn.
Everywhere. You're everywhere, Sabine. Every time I open my LinkedIn too, I see you.
Every time. You're right there on top.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Great thing. That's a great
Hey, I got somebody who commented, which I thought was very nice. He said, "This is fabulous because you bring it right to the point. You don't drag your heels on something. You go right to the point." And I'm like, "Well, yeah. I only have 30 seconds. I better be quick."
Yeah. I've had a couple people from SwissQ start following me, so you know, maybe we'll gain some.
To Jason, I'll do this right after the call because he's the application specialist and he's the one that I normally would go to with any crazy questions.
And to be honest, like that.
Wait a second, he was in Chicago. You could have met him.
Yeah, they actually and in Vegas, they had a booth in Vegas, and yes. I did not stop there because I did not know what they were doing.
Well, to be honest, their tech definitely, I think, in my opinion at least, qualifies as digital embellishment. Like, maybe we should have the wide format guys join this call as well. I think that'd be a good place to start.
I mean, the only thing I would be concerned about is conflict with MGI.
Well, no, I mean, they just sponsor the embellishment designer. Everybody's welcome. Skodix, Harrison, Bruno, everybody's welcome to come. Just because we have a sponsor doesn't mean that this is open to all. So
I find this to be new technology that everyone is like not even aware of.
Yeah.
And I wasn't aware of. How could I have gone to Printing United and not know about it?
Right.
He didn't talk to me first. I'm teasing. No, I know these guys for years. I've known these guys for years. But you know, it's so new that it's not really widely available yet.
Right.
I can't really talk about it because the first thing when people see these reels and more this is happening, people like, this is fabulous, where can I get it?
Right.
So if it's so new that it's not really available yet on the floor somewhere, I remember when the owner of SwissQ Print and one guy were exhibiting at a teeny tiny booth at Print United, and I stumbled over them. And basically then year after year, they grew and grew and grew to what they're now. So it's fascinating. And now it's available, obviously. But at the beginning, it was just...
It's great technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's really quick. We had I had the pleasure of having David on our podcast, which I think is coming out on Thursday.
David Drucker.
And we talked a little bit about a really interesting project that he was working on. Matt, I don't know if you, I know Sabine, you did a piece on it, on this new project. Have you heard about what David did with his Safari book or no?
No.
David pushed it.
Oh, he pushed it hard.
He's well known for it. That's why we love him.
Why don't you tell us more about your piece that you put together?
I kind of went the other direction from digital. And it was only an idea. I have a friend, maybe I can pull this up. I have a friend who took a photo of a family of zebras on Safari. And I've had it in my phone since she posted it over a year ago. And then I had a prospect ask me about producing a series of 8 Safari books for them.
8 books, might I point out.
8 books. And really the budget was, it was unlimited. Let's put it that way. It was a billionaire who took 8 of his clients on Safari. So this was the legacy book. Oh, look at that. This was the book.
Oh no, I did see that. I did see that. Sabine, you made a great presentation on that.
Thank you.
You know, so Matt, it isn't any different than you experimenting on your presses. You want to know how far you can go with it, what can be done and what can't be done. I worked with Metal Magic on this, and we originally started by embossing, multi-level embossing, sculpture embossing, the zebras on paper. But then I was looking at how we're going to build the rest of the book, and they talked about gold gilding, and for me that didn't work. It didn't say Safari to it. It said glitter, but it didn't say Safari. And I had asked about embossing metal, the copper. And, you know, I was forewarned that the metal's probably going to break the dye. The dye was expensive to make to begin with. But I would think it's much like you, Matt, where you have this piece of machinery and you don't know its abilities until you get into it. And if that means investing more of your money and your time, your own money and your own time, Because at some point down the line, you might have the opportunity to use it to sell the idea. And I went through three different thicknesses of copper until we got it. And we wound up being able to emboss that copper. What happened then after is that I decided I was going to move the gilding into copper, and then came the ribbons to lift it. Spot and the reminder, and it kind of all fell into place. And I really put this together and got all the we want to do this, we like what you came up with, but I really didn't see the magnitude of what we were doing until the whole book was put together, and utilize that as what is the next idea, where can we go with that. So I hand it over to Sabine first to put it out there. I mean, I finished this in October, but I wanted it put together and I wanted it explained the right way. And then was in talking to Kevin to put it out there. Now, what I do on my social media is I'm going to begin to diversify how I send that out, who I tag. And what I've done in the last 2 weeks, if you look at my LinkedIn, is I've really begun to take older productions and rebuild my following. And I've been able to do that because I want to try to, through LinkedIn, put this out to select communities. The last thing that I did with this is I sent in about 7 or 8 different types of papers, and we did the embossing on those papers. So I'm going to do a study on that. Refraction of light, reflection of light, how it looks once it's once it's done on a darker paper, on a metallic paper, so on and so forth. And it's really the studies that I've done for my 41 years in the past, but now I'm putting it out there.
Yeah.
And, I want to see what the response is. I put up yesterday an AB Dick machine.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I got over 1,600 views of that within a 24-hour period. So
that's the first press I ever ran.
Right. I mean, so you should go on there and tell your story, Matt. That's what I'm trying to do.
I even still have a picture of me. It was 1981.
Oh, please put that up there. Please.
You wouldn't recognize him. I remember that you would not recognize Matt if he does share that photo. It's going to be phenomenal. But what's really interesting too is that was when I was at MGI. They were the first dealers that we had in North America. Was AB Dick. So that they kind of took us to the U.S. Back when I was at MGI. So that's kind of an interesting story.
But with most of these, I'll say they're men. I would love to see to hear about a lady that started in the industry there, but that is a starting type of press, or maybe a multi and such. And we have these stories, we don't share them, and by sharing them, somebody put up yesterday that they're running envelopes and there was a clasp on the envelope, and what they did to the blanket resolve that. Well, hey, that's great information. But we've all done that. Let's hear about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you that's not the direction I really want to go in with this. I want to go more towards designers, but I find that there are less and less designers that are responding. I know that they're there, and I know that they're viewing what I've put up there. And I can tell that because I put up a piece of artwork about 4 years ago. It's a motorcycle painting I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 15,000 views on that.
Yeah.
So I know they're there. I just got to get them to come out. So I'm just trying different things on LinkedIn to see who's responding to that.
Very cool. Very. All right. So yeah, to come back to our original from a design perspective, Sabine, Matt, David, do you guys have any predictions as to what we're going to see a lot of this year other than confusion?
I'm gonna say this because I know what I want to see.
Okay.
I'm working on a school that is building a new building, and they have an illustration of the building, and they're going after high net worth individuals in this brochure for revenue. But the illustration of the building really falls short.
Yes. Is this Make a Wish?
No. It's actually Yeshiva, and in Brooklyn, and it's not being presented the right way to the group who have the money for the building. So in looking at this, I looked at, the Scodex, the gold Scodex, and the relief it has in its print. And I said to the designer, illustrate, do a line drawing of that rendering. And let's put that on the cover. Because to me, that illustration in gold is jewelry.
So we see a lot of that in real estate. For example, in high-end real estate, when they're trying to sell it, they're only going to make maybe 100 brochures because of the price. And you'll see like some of these real estate company will hire designers. Actually, there's one guy in Orlando that does nothing but this. We'll go and use that tactile effect you were just talking about, David.
We do that a lot.
To do like the wood paneling in the flooring or the tiles so I could feel what tiles feel like, or the windows, they feel like glass. So by using, I guess, tactile digital embellishment effects, the printed piece can actually feel like the real thing. So just how do you get people to engage with your house?
Well, we have to be the leaders in suggesting them.
Yeah.
You have a designer that has something like this designer. He's very well-known designer. In the past, I would have just taken his work and produced it.
Right.
But I saw something different. So you give them an introduction into your idea. We here will set those trends. You have to have some design sense your own. You have ideas because you use the equipment and what the equipment can do and what they can't do. You have to put thought to it and say, if I'm going to do this, a project on this, this is what I'd like to do on it. So the opportunity comes to you and you have to begin to let them know the direction that you want to go into. Design and help them design for press.
I think the direction that is possible. We just did a survey among our 20,000 newsletter recipients, and they're like, okay, what's your biggest problem? And one of the top ones was, we have limited time to learn about this because we're doing so many other things, and that's what I've been saying for quite a while. They don't drop everything and learn about print. They're doing a million other things. So it's up to the likes of us, as David said, to basically help them and say, they don't know what they don't know. They design to the limits of what they know. And they might not be aware that even though this has been around the block for a while now, we can elevate this by doing this. We can elevate this by doing that. Right. And, that's our, I don't want to say our job, that's our responsibility.
It is our job.
Because, yeah, our job, I wanted a bigger word than job, David. I was looking for something. Because they don't know, and I don't blame them. It's confusing. They go to their printer, and we all know there's two kinds. There's the order takers, and there's the ones like David and Matt who basically say, okay, wait a second. Now that I look at it, how about? But many printers don't do that. They run it and they're done. And they're looking for the next one.
Well, it's all about the money, you know. But for me, and I say this, I believe in the podcast that Kevin did with me. I can never be inspired until I begin to have conversations with creative. And I don't know how far I can go. And you can introduce something to them, and they might say, well, we can't use it on this, or our budget doesn't allow it. But at least you planted a seed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The future. And in 100% of the time, I see you come back.
Interesting.
At some point. If you're afraid to give your 2 cents, or maybe you're reluctant to give that information, well, once you do and you do see come back, isn't that inspiration to continue to do that?
Yeah.
You know,
you give them one piece of information to elevate it that they didn't know before. So next time it's coming back, then you can give them another piece. So you don't go at it with a water hose, but you basically help them elevate bit by bit by bit. Absolutely right, David.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to tell you that it's just in the last few years that I really discovered this of myself. And I, in 100% of the time, I always give my 2 cents. Because it becomes our production.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a partner. I'm on the team. And so, you know, if they have a metal sign that they have to do, you know, they're going to call me. They want to do something on fabric. They want to do something. They're going to call me, because now the conversation is not one of, well, I'm a vendor.
Right.
All right. What does that mean?
Right. Right. How about you, Matt? What do you see as some of the major trends for 2025?
Well, I did an entire presentation, but I don't think we have time to go through it now.
Well, let's see what you got. Throw it up there. Let's see what we got.
It was I just put a little ebook together. All right. So I was seeing a lot of texture. Anything that's AI generated, you all can see this, right?
Yeah.
Anything that's abstract and geometric and quirky has to be more ethical and more inclusive. But there's this shift going back towards nostalgia, but then it has to be sustainable. But now there's the metaverse and AR and VR, but then there's custom typography, and we're seeing a lot of that. Dynamic gradients, that kind of combined back in with the textures, more imagination and surreal type of things, humorous and hand-drawn things, inclusive design is additional mention, being able to span cultural differences better, and more accessibility by differently abled persons. So you would have to have friends who are autistic. You would have to have friends that had color or vision.
Yeah,
impairments,
yeah,
that type of thing. A lot of the times when I'm working with color or textures or shades, I have to keep in mind, like, if I were colorblind,
right,
how would I view this?
Interesting.
Yeah. Overall, I think it's just going to be an intriguing blend. Like I talked about, everybody since 1990 up until now kind of all looks the same as they have through that whole span of time, because it's all become this melting pot of styles and everything kind of works. But now, like I did in one of my last videos, we start blenderizing these kinds of styles, but with more nature and humanity. So rather than just trying to come up with a commodity, you're putting more of a style or personality into it. And I think the most common implication is going to be more motion, more movement, anything that implies perceived movement. So, you know, when you want to talk about styles, I was thinking, okay, so we've got textures, lots of textures. Let me get my notes up here. Grains, heat mapping, because we've gone from, you know, the gradient free stark clean edges to adding film grains and textures. So film grain, I'm seeing a lot of that popping up in a lot of things. Adobe Max used film grains in their last presentation.
What is
tile.
Film grains?
Yeah.
Well, see up here in the corner in the upper right, use my mouse, you know.
Oh,
you,
that one.
Yeah, film grain. So when I used to shoot film, you know, one of my favorites to shoot was Tri-X 1000, which was the grainiest film you could get. And if you pushed it, then it got even more grainy. And if you did it in color, it created these kinds of effects. It was just, I thought it was, you could get that with film grain. Now you're moving back into the nostalgia of trying to recreate a film grain in your graphic design. Heat mapping, that seems to be a thing. I'm seeing more of that come up, even to the point where Adobe's sponsoring tutorials on it. And that takes a little bit of skill in Photoshop, but you can pull that off. Maximalism. Now, you would only use this for big brands. And I find it a little tedious because I tend to be a little ADHD. So looking at this is a bit overwhelming for me, but you're going to be seeing a lot of this too, this maximalist, extremely detailed. Like, this is a really good application for AI, though. If you're on a budget and don't have the time or the personnel to illustrate something like this, AI can really go a long way with generating this type of maximalism. Conversely, minimalism. This is a great ad by PayPal. That is so sharp. I mean, it says everything you need to say in just like three things on the page with no background. I absolutely love minimalism. This is more of a classic style of minimalism. And then this is as minimalist as you can get. So some good examples of that too. We're going to see a lot more unconventional color combinations. And some of these, I just kind of cry a little bit when I see them. But I'm just passing on what people are kind of like moving towards. So burgundy and electric lime, look what it does to the burgundy. I mean, if you were to isolate that burgundy, that's a really clean wine color.
It looks brown.
It looks crazy, doesn't it? So the combination of colors changes the colors. And that's basically the intent. Teal and red, I wouldn't have thought of teal and red, but it works. I actually like it. Of course, there's different shades of it here. It's not just this color and that color. But, I think in a fun kind of way that does work. Copper and black, this has always been one of my favorite combinations. I don't know why this is being labeled as a new trend, but basically, if you were to look up a color guide online with what colors to blend with copper, there are other shades of copper. They're just other shades of copper. There's really no other recommendation for that. Coral and green, how bizarre. But if your green isn't too intense, so here we're back to the color value thing. If you were to reduce this to a black and white image, the intensity of the apple is very close to the intensity of the coral, particularly down in the gradient in the lower right-hand corner. So you don't have a lot of difference between the color value between the two, which actually makes it work. Orange and blue.
No Gators.
Yeah. Now that we're having more extended color gamuts on these machines, you're going to see people pushing the boundaries on these kinds of colors. Orange and hot pink, I don't really care about the combination of those two colors, but when you combine it with a third, like teal that I did here, and added a little film grain, I think it works out pretty well. But yeah, hot pink and orange, you're going to have to be careful about how you combine those two. Turquoise and tangerine, that's one of my favorites. I actually love that. Amazing contrast. Lavender and olive green.
I like that, actually. That looks nice.
But we
talked about earth tones, right? Yeah. Becoming more and more popular. I mean, I think that's right in it, right?
Yeah, because it's kind of muted. But you would think lavender, and I don't know. But when you see it here, you're like, that could actually work. Indigo and copper, this has always been one of my favorite combinations. Nice. I think it's just absolutely, it's rich. It's really rich. Aqua and ruby red, but look at the proportions. I think if you had a lot of red and a little aqua, or a lot of aqua and a little red, then that works, and it definitely works here. You're going to see a lot of custom masking where you're using shapes to inset things. Look at these on the left, you know, walk this world. And they're taking the, in this particular campaign, they're taking the ribbon shape of the M's in the logo type and recreating that in these shapes, in these little ads, which is quite clever. Here's some more masking. This is like a revival of like mid to late 80s. We were doing this.
I just want to say deja vu.
Yeah. It's that revival. If it's 20, 25 years old, it's always going to come back.
Old is new again.
Yeah. This is one of my absolute favorites. And if you were to think of how to embellish this, look at all this negative space in the orange you have to work with, that if you put the right texture in there, would actually make this more maximalist than it is minimalist. And this is one of my absolute favorites because it's still this masking effect, but they use these wild, cool, flowing, organic, extremely colorful designs with the typography, particularly in the upper right-hand corner, that is this retro. It's a retro serif. So that's the next thing I think you're going to be seeing a lot of, and I'm already seeing it as of January 1st. So it's this kind of groovy, fluid, bubble-like typography. And I'm also seeing already a lot of tutorials. My LinkedIn isn't just a bunch of marketing. My LinkedIn is this constant stream of tutorials, and they're mostly done by folks in India. I guess that's what they do. And it's how to create all these ribbon effects, all these weird font styles, how to customize all these things. This ad actually showed up on my Facebook feed the other day. And I'm like, oh, they're going with the bubble type, you know? And I'm like, well, where do you get stuff like this? Where do designers find this? You can either follow these tutorials and start amassing them and start, I guess, practicing them. And then, like, I subscribe to several service bureaus that provide fonts and images and videos and music and graphics and vector and seamless designs and all that stuff. And Envato actually has a section for fonts. And when you type in retro font, this is what you get. And I'm like, wow, there's all kinds of retro stuff here. Additionally, in other... like I use Dreamstime, which is another art service bureau that I use. They don't have fonts there, but they do have letter sets where they're vector. There's like A through Z and 0 through 9. And so you take all those little pieces and string them together to form a headline or words or something that you want. And they're already done. They're already done up like this, you know, and so you don't have to go and create them, take time in Illustrator to create them.
Adobe does this now on Express. So they have word art where you kind of say, make it look like a pink bubble, and then you type in your word, and Adobe Express has this now. It's pretty,
and pretty cool. You can also do that in, oh crap, now I forget.
Canva?
No, the one that we use for Firefly. You can do that in Firefly.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. That's what I'm seeing. And that's kind of looking at my world around me, what other artists are doing, what the trends are on what these designers are doing on social media with the tutorials for what's upcoming, and that they're like all doing it. And what other design bureaus are doing as far as what they think.
For you, Matt, because I know we reached the top of the hour. You had a number of times you mentioned copper. So are we saying copper is going to overtake gold?
I do believe so. I do believe so. We're going to see more copperish tones. And you can actually.
Warm, it's more different.
Yeah,
David it's was full on trend with his book there.
Totally ahead of his time on that one.
Oh, always.
Hey Matt, I would love for us to do like a tactical trendsetters video of you just doing that presentation. I think that'd be great to put a little video together and drop it on social media. This is really fantastic. Well,
Sabine, you're about to do the same thing.
No, but I'm talking about really print technologies and print applications. So I'm not going into typography because there's so many other people already doing this. So feel free to do that.
Yeah, and I just want to let you know, it's not my idea. I don't want to, right now, this is Eric Vessel's been texting me in the background, be like, we need to. He came up with the cool name, so I can't take the credit for it. But yeah, we should do that. That's awesome.
Hey, Matt, I'm sorry you didn't come prepared to this meeting.
Yes,
I know. Pathetic. It's just pathetic.
That was awesome, guys. Listen, you guys are phenomenal. Thank you so much to our sponsors. Thank you, MGI Digital Technology. Thank you to Paper Specs and Sabine and the DEA for supporting this little ragtag group of designers trying to figure out how to unlock the future with all these new technologies. So we will hopefully see you guys next month. Sabine, do you want to talk a little bit really quickly about the event that your webinar that you're be presenting?
Yes, we're our yearly trends webinar. So really the five hottest, well, not five, seven actually, but nevertheless, we're talking about the hottest print design trends. And it's really, right. We're focusing not specifically on typography, but all about print. You know, what is coming up? What should you watch out for? How is print being used? And this is what Matt and I talked about earlier or touched on earlier. You know, there's so many different ways in which you can apply these different technologies. And we're going to be going deep on that. And that's what I've always know. But we all know print runs have gotten smaller. So a lot of these technologies and these print trends can be used on smaller print runs, which I think is fabulous. So it's on, I'm sorry, January 30, go to paperspecs.com. There is a banner at the top where you can sign up. It's a free webinar.
Okay.
And we always have some amazing giveaways. So you might be there. Definitely.
Well, we will definitely be there. Sabine, send me the link so that I can put it onto the video link. And then I'll make sure that everybody gets that information on there. All right, guys. Well, listen, thanks again for all your time. It's been fantastic spending the past hour with you, and we will hopefully see you on Sabine's webinar, and then hopefully next month when we have our next designer.
I found it.
Oh.
What?
Oh, is that you?
Oh, good. Well, you better go.
Oh, my God.
I better see that in the next 20 minutes on my LinkedIn site. Matt, I'm going to be very upset with you.
It's a dare.
Awesome. Very cool.
Fabulous.
All right, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Good to see you.
Bye.